Welcome, everybody, to Season 3, Episode 1 of That Round It podcast. It's honestly quite crazy to think that it's 3 seasons into this after a random text to Mike White back in 2021 now. Either way, Season 3 is here. It is myself, Scott Beeks, who will be leading this season. Unfortunately, Mike and Tops will not be with us for this year. Mike has, you know, other priorities. Life, as we all know, comes up and is busy for him. I do hope to have Mike and Tops both on at some point throughout Season 3 to talk about specific ideas and thoughts with them. But as it goes for hosting and stuff, it will just be myself. And that sort of brings me on a little bit to Season 3's theme. This theme and this season will be dedicated to ideas and still trying to push the sport in the optimal way, and knowing that we're not going to get to the optimal way in one day, but trying to make those small changes, but constant changes to try and move it in that right direction, and focusing more on ideas to how that can occur, bringing on guests to have those discussions and conversations, and not really focusing much on the players' ranking side. Because I think if the sport starts making these dramatic changes in regards to the gameplay, in regards to the community building, in regards to valuing more people who are outside players, then I think we're going to see the sport be in a lot better position in 1 or 2 years' time versus if we just talk about top players and rankings, because it's these people, in regards to the community people, that really do build the sport, and they're growing the base and making everything easier for people to get to the top. And, you know, if the gameplay improves, everything else sort of falls into place. So there won't be much talk about players and rankings, but more on ideas and innovation and thoughts with the particular people in the community. On that note, we have Swipeball Chris on today, Chris Ruder, the CEO, and it's great to have him on. We wish we had him on earlier. But, you know, a lot of guests and other topics to talk about, but we are very, very happy to have him on. When we initially decided to invite Chris on the podcast, this was long before any drama or any conflict had started between Brookline and Spikeball. However, we, of course, addressed the elephant in the room and talked about some things. I'm sort of playing the role of just letting the conversation go. I'm not taking sides, as I don't think anyone should anyway. But I'm not taking sides. I'm just sort of trying to get information from both parties out there, playing a little bit of devil's advocate. My personal opinions are not really formalized yet because we don't know all the information. But that's sort of the theme when we're talking to Chris in the first half an hour about the Brookline Spikeball controversy. And I got to be honest, it was quite frustrating to talk so long about this just because it's a little bit away from what I like discussing, and it was more on a political side, but nonetheless it was needed to talk about because it does directly affect the community and also, you know, the reputation of Spikeball and the future of the sport. With all that said, I appreciate you. I can't really say we now without Gavin and Mike, but I appreciate you all listening. I really hope you enjoy this season. Got a lot of stuff planned. There won't be a regular schedule and upload series, but I'm confident you guys will enjoy the episodes, especially if you've been a fan for Season 1 and Season 2. And with all that said, sorry for the super long intro. Let's get the episode underway with Season 3, Episode 1.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, pleasure to be on, and I'm more than happy to wait my turn in line. There's a lot of people you've had that definitely should have been on well before I was. So thank you.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's always fun to bring on some more guests. I will say and highlight that this year of the podcasting will be quite different, or slightly different to previous years, where we're really focusing on this year talking about ideas, not people. We're trying to stay away from the rankings, the tournament events, because although that is the storylines behind the sport, it doesn't potentially have the biggest influence. If you set that ideas and you bring that in the base and you build that base, then everything else sort of leads on for itself. And that's sort of the plan and the idea for this year on That Round It podcast.
Love it.
So, Chris, before we do get into this episode, I do recommend people to give a good listen to the podcast episode of How I Built This featuring Chris, that was aired last year in 2023. And it's just an incredible story and a really good interview that sort of dives into the very beginning of Spikeball, dating back to when it was true, when it was invented in 89, to then when it was brought to market by Chris, to then as it built over the years and how it developed into what it is now, to the start of the competitive scene and what bursted the life of the competitive scene and the youth groups and young people being a huge factor behind that, and sort of the story of to where we are now in the RailNet world. But a very good episode, and a lot of that will be referenced throughout this episode because it's just a great podcast by Chris. And I believe, is it Guy Riz, the podcast host?
Guy Raz.
Guy Raz, thank you.
It was a great. Well, thank you, number one. I'm a little biased, but I liked the episode as well. It was a 3-hour and 15-minute interview, with no breaks. So it was a long one, but it's a massive podcast. He is a very talented interviewer. He does his homework, and I was honored to be on it. It was nice.
That's very interesting to know. You did a very good job with the editing to get it down to just over an hour, I think it was. And so there's quite a few things I want to discuss today, and also some questions we got from our listeners that we'll get into. And those type of things such as Spikeball's future, Spikeball's current position, because obviously there's been a lot of, I mean, not rumors, but confirmations that Spikeball have been had to release a lot of employees over the last 12 months. Other things such as balls, manufacturing issues that the community are concerned or want or would like more information about. And so we're going to touch on some of those issues. And the one thing we sort of have to touch on to begin with, because it's sort of the elephant in the room, and something that has been building and has been building actually after our initial reach out to you to try and get you on the podcast. So, but we do need to talk about the sort of elephant in the room, which is the current conflict between Brookline and Spikeball. Alrighty, Scott here. Usually I never do this where I film back over the podcast. I want to leave it raw and leave it live and have it out there for listeners. But I want to do this situation and give the context to this situation justice. So I want to, I'm now re-recording this to set the scene for the question I'm now asking Chris. To give context to the Brookline and Spikeball situation, Brookline and Spikeball struck a deal together in 2020 where Brookline would be the sole European distributor for Spikeball in Europe, meaning that they could partner with no other European distributor for the next 5 years up until 2025. Now, the first 2 years went very well. Brookline smashing all target goals, selling a lot of sets, also helped by COVID, where lawn games were up massively. But nonetheless, great success for both Spikeball and Brookline. Now, Brookline were then recommended to, instead of getting inventory from Spikeball's warehouse in Europe, which was around 45 minutes from Brookline, the company themselves, they were recommended to get inventory and stock straight from China, therefore bearing the risk of, any potential downfall because, they have to put in all the money up front to receive all the stock. Brookline were a little bit hesitant against this, but they realized that obviously there was huge benefits for them in regards to ordering more quantity and selling more quantity over the next years if their numbers were to continue to grow. But were hesitant and did then write, or Brookline claimed to have written in the contract, that any excess of inventory was should be sent back to Spikeball, and Brookline did not have to worry about it because it was excess stock. Spikeball were claiming now that this was not in the contract. This was only in the contract if an agreement between the two parties was terminated prematurely. So while there was an agreement between the two parties, then Brookline could not send the stock back. And that is where there's a real dispute between Spikeball and Brookline of what we're going to get into. And it's just worth noting that the numbers in regards to this is that Brookline made the order of 2.4 million of product, weren't able to sell them all. And then the reason they weren't able to sell them all was obviously many factors, but one factor also being the war between Russia and Ukraine, and that directly impacting the European market. People didn't have as much disposable income, housing prices, costs, utilities, all of that went up. So people aren't looking for lawn games, plus the opening of or the world after the pandemic. Brookline had a huge amount of quantity left, and obviously didn't just have to pay Spikeball for the 2.4 million worth of inventory. They also now had to pay to stock and store and transport all this stock and inventory, which they didn't plan to have. So they did sell a decent amount of the 2.4 million worth of inventory. However, not all of it was sold. 1.5 million around was left, and that then needed to be stored and consistently transported. And these costs that Brookline built up because of having such a huge quantity of inventory left over meant that they weren't just in the red to Spikeball having to give them the 2.4 million, which they couldn't instantly because they didn't sell all the sets, but also now having to take out loans and still paying storage fees that were excess of 400,000 a year, and transportation fees being a similar number each year. It's obviously led to more problems than just paying Spikeball back the debt. That's pretty much the summary or a decent bullet point form of the situation before we get into it with Chris. Again, there's some things in this that Brookline have come out and talked about in via PDF responses to Chris's email, and there's going to be a lot of back and forth. I'm just saying that I'm here as a listener, playing a little bit of devil's advocate. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to get involved in all the legal stuff. If things that are said on this podcast or said by Brookline that turn out to be false or misleading, then obviously that affects my trust to them as people and as a company. But I'm just simply interested in listening to the points of view. And that's pretty much how the rest of this conversation goes. So I hope you guys enjoy. But it's about the first half an hour of the episode before we talk into other stuff regarding the sports and Spikeball's role within it. And I am going to end this little side note by passing it over to Chris, where I ask him the question regarding his thoughts on the whole Brookline Spikeball situation, especially within the public domain right now.
It is disheartening to see some of the responses. And I realize typically it's a vocal minority. So if there's 100 people that care about this, there might be two or three people that shout the loudest, and the other 98 people, don't really say anything. So I need to keep that perspective in mind. But, if you think of the mission of the company, it is to bring people together through competition and fun. And that is what it's really always been. And, one of the most gratifying parts of this job is and always has been to see the relationships that are formed. So, Scott, you personally would not be doing this podcast if RoundNet didn't exist, right? If Spikeball hadn't have done what it did, if Jeff hadn't have invented it, right? There was all sorts of things that had to come in place for us to be at this moment right now. And I don't know how many relationships, friendships, et cetera, you've generated through RoundNet, but I got a feeling it's a ton. And a lot of people listening to this have probably also generated tons of friendships, relationships, and whether it's through a formal club competition or, I can't tell you how many people that I've heard stories from about how they met their husband or their wife through RoundNet, and they eventually got married and they had children and all this, like, that stuff feels so good. Like that is, that, at least for me, that is the most gratifying part. So when we're going through something like this and people are calling names and making accusations and, it's not necessarily from Brookline that it hurts, but it is from the community that it's like, man, we have done, yes, we've made mistakes, and I will absolutely own up to that. I'm not perfect. Could have done things better. Have never intentionally misled anybody or anything like that. There's no conspiracy or We're not trying to get back at anybody on anything. But we are trying. We are spending an insane amount of money trying to build the sport and all of this, and it's an unfortunate part of the job. So I know as CEO, I'm gonna have to deal with this stuff from time to time, but I've had some really nice conversations with some people over the last few weeks, and I do appreciate those that are giving me the opportunity to sort of explain. I want nothing more than a strong round neck community worldwide, but in this instance, especially in Europe. And look forward to getting back to that, but we've got some stuff to deal with right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good to put things into perspective like that. Obviously, with when you we get so drawn down on such, details, whether it be fine or huge details, it's important that people do sometimes take a step back and observe the whole situation. Although I think regarding coming back to the situation with the Brookline, a lot of people's this sort of stems onto some things that people have been now feeling towards Spiteball for quite some time. They may have been feeling that Spiteball haven't quite been doing everything they could have on the competitive side, maybe not supporting the sport in the utmost in the way that they believe in the community believe that they could have or should have. And we'll get to maybe a few of those reasons or factors in a little while. But with feeling that way, this situation that then stems quite a lot of negativity towards Spiteball is then quite easy to then put all that and even push them over the edge. And I think for a lot of people, because one of the main reasons why, again, this is pushed over the edge is because of Brookline's influence in Europe and for their impact on the sport around it. They were very, very active in helping grow the community and helping grow the base of the sport, given that if we grow the base of the sport, everything else just sits in line. Once you have NGBs, once you have a European Round Association, everything's running correctly and that they're growing, then the sport is just going to grow, easily, because it's almost like you have a marketing manager in Egypt and a marketing manager in France and a marketing manager in Great Britain who's now doing all these, free work and free hours for the sport around there, which therefore indirectly impact the sport of Spike, or sorry, the sport around there and directly impact Spiteball as a company. So it just is a rolling ball once you have that all in place. And I think with Brookline being so active within that circle of growing the sport, many people are disappointed. And I think for a lot of people, the real nitty-gritty detail comes down to how this debt really did begin, because Brookline will claim and say that the 2.4 million worth of inventory was made and Spiteball agreed to the quantity that was brought into Brookline. And it was then to the point where, well, this 2.4 million worth of inventory, they couldn't sell all of it, again, because of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine affecting the European economy. And then them claiming that the excess inventory should have been sent back to Spikeball, which I believe was around 30,000 standard sets, 12,000 pro sets, and they have released recently in writing that they have the contract agreement that Spiteball had to agree to take this inventory back, which started the initial debt. So what was the situation between Brookline and Spiteball there? Why was this inventory not sent back? And why did Spiteball not take it back? And why was then this payment plan needed to be put in place?
Sure. The clause that Brookline shared yesterday from the contract was just a tiny snippet of a contract that I don't know is how many pages long. That clause was from the termination clause. So what was left out was if the contract terminates, the supplier, Spikeball, will need to buy back any inventory that essentially has been paid for. So in 2022, the contract was still live and still going. So we had no legal obligation to take that inventory back. Wanting to be a good partner, we offered to look into it, which we did. And if you look at the texts that were also included in yesterday's post, that shows us saying, yes, we tried, but we weren't able to make it work. That is not us saying, yes, we were legally obligated to take it back, which we never were. And we never said we would. We said we would try. We talked to our bank, we talked to our accountants and others, and it took like a couple months to try and get an answer. But the answer we got was no, Spikeball, you cannot do this. So I don't see yesterday's post as evidence of Spikeball going back on its word or doing anything illegal or breaking the contract. And, I have, as you can imagine, the amount of time I've been spending with lawyers these last few months, we have a team of lawyers in the Netherlands and in Germany. These aren't American lawyers that are trying to translate Dutch or German law. And they have explained to me that, yeah, this termination clause or what you guys have in your distribution agreement, this is all standard language. This is what most distribution agreements have. And yes, when they end, it is common for the supplier to buy back anything that either hasn't been sold and or hasn't been paid for. But if we were to agree to take, when we started the agreement with Brookline, that was 2020. So we had been in business for about 12 years. In those 12 years, we never signed one agreement with anybody saying we would take inventory back while the relationship was live. So I'm not entirely sure why, after 12 years of not doing it, why all of a sudden we would.
So just to paraphrase you, it was only in the contract once an agreement, or sorry, once any partnership between the two parties was ended, that Spiteball had to take back any excess inventory. While the contract was still live, Spiteball did not have to agree to take back any excess inventory made by Brookline.
Correct.
Okay, and obviously the confusion in this is that Brookline is saying that this needed to occur before any partnership had ended.
Yes. So I believe their argument is no, the contract says you have to take it back no matter what. And we would never agree to something like that. We never had prior to this. And as my lawyers are telling me, like, no, Chris, it's crystal clear. You only take it back if the agreement is over. And the agreement wasn't over in 2022. I didn't want it to be over, and I wanted to help and try and be a good partner. And I believe that's what we did.
So I'm just not understanding how there could be such confusion between the two parties, given that Bass, the owner of Brookline, has come out and has other emails and texts saying that the safety nets they created to ensure that they would be able to not go so much in debt if they were to order an excess amount of inventory. And within those emails, it does state that excess inventory could be returned to Spikeball. And that's again within his email on the 26th of August 2022. So I'm assuming that he's again obviously missing the detail that it's only in session while if he's believing that it's in session while the contract and the parties are still in cooperation with each other, whereas you're believing it is only in session once any cooperation has been ended.
Yeah, and I can't speak for him, but maybe he translated us trying to take it back or trying to help as us in some way having some sort of legal obligation to take it back, but we never did. And, he has said how we've forced them or how we are the reason or we wanted them to go into debt. Why would I want a partner of mine to go into debt? If they're in debt or struggling, that puts me in my business at more risk as well. I want my business partners to be financially sound and healthy. And if there's a way that I can help them achieve that, then I'm going to do it all day long. There was zero incentive for me, especially in 2022, to try and play hardball and say, we had our own problems, absolutely. And, 2022, what happened? Yes, Ukraine and Russia was part of it, but there was also a really big pullback, especially in America, of outdoor consumer products. In COVID, whether you made tennis rackets, soccer balls, footballs, or spike ball sets, everybody saw a really big uptick in sales. And then in 2022 and 2023, as the world opened back up, everybody saw a really big pullback. So that was a good bit of what was going on in 2022 as well. But I had no, we tried to help. We wanted to make it work. And as I've shared, like I think what we're going through right now is sort of this like ugly divorce, and people will choose different sides. Misinformation is going to be shared. I of course don't believe that I've shared any, and I've been as truthful and as open as I can. And but I, even though I'm the CEO, I'm not the legal expert. That's the lawyers. That is the judges, and it's in their hands now, and I think that's where it should be.
Yep, I can understand that. I think the two just things we need to discuss before I think we move on from this issue is the fact that Brookline were obviously left quite surprised that their agreement was cancelled in late December 2023. And we understand from your perspective that it was stopped due to the sporadic payments and still owing of the 1.5 million that was left over from the 2.4 million from the batch of inventory that we've previously discussed in this podcast. And that up until that date, 900,000 had been paid back. Brookline had actually sold all that inventory, and was still working out the payment plan that was agreed between Brookline and Spikeball. However, of course, they couldn't just pay this 1.5 million back immediately because they incurred a lot of unexpected costs through holding this stock for so long. Of course, holding so much stock is obviously so bad for the business in regards to, I think it was around 400,000 a year to hold all that stock, plus transportation costs that they had to incur while holding and moving this stock. So they couldn't just pay, the fee back immediately, of which you, of course, know, and maybe not everyone knows from the outside. So if the payment plan was in place and they already paid back 900,000 and it was already scheduled to pay back more in the first quarter of 2024, why did the apparent stop of agreement between you and Brookline occur in late December 23?
Debt payments had completely stopped later in 2023. So there was a timeline shared yesterday, but I believe that timeline stopped in August. That timeline did not include the rest of the year. So payments essentially stopped, and we also got sales forecasts, and we're told to expect, sales of this much in November, but it would actually be this much. And then, I don't know, October, we were told this much. And the payments and the orders, what we were told was one thing, but what actually happened was wildly different, and it became so unreliable. We have a business to run, and the biggest problem was stores were empty and throughout Europe, and they didn't have any inventory. So we had heard, we weren't in, we don't really know who the stores were, but like the main goal job of the distributor is to get product in the stores. And my finance team and Brookline's team had plenty of calls. And after those calls, and it was over months, it wasn't just like one or two things. There were struggles for, starting in 22, moving on. And we no longer had the confidence that they were going to be able to get out of this hole. And again, we were kept being told that one thing was going to happen, but then another happened, and that happened enough times where we just lost confidence. We're like, we can't keep going like this. So we wanted to. It would have been way easier to keep working that with them if they were able to keep make payments and do everything. And they would keep telling us, yes, we're going to have the cash, but they never did. So I'm not sure how many more chances or how much more time we should have given. From my perspective, I think we were more than patient, and we gave plenty of tries to make it work. But at some point, you have to move on. And it wasn't personal at all. And I wish things would have worked. I know they had said, oh, Spikeball got rid of them so that we could get better margins with a new one. No, not at all. Now, is the new person, is their pricing a little different? I believe it is, but I'm assuming that maybe because Brookline was selling for too little. If you sell a product for too little, you're not going to make enough money, and maybe it's not going to work. So, That's not for me to speak to, but I will t say that, better margins and that played no role in this decision. It was, we need a partner that we can trust and rely on and can get product and can pay bills on time and get product in store. And we no longer had confidence that they could do that.
Which brings on to the last topic to sort of touch on is so the new company that Spikeball you guys are now pairing with is called Buffalo. They are also in the Netherlands, and the discuss or the topic point in this topic, the discussing point in this topic is that that company is run by Irvin De Beck, which was a former employee of Brookline. So how did this communication start occurring? Because there's also been, issues and privacy issues within certain people around the community with Buffalo potentially using information he acquired while working for Brookline to the benefit of Spikeball and Buffalo in their new collaboration. How did this new collaboration come, and when did it start, and what do you know of any information that's been used from Brookline to then aid Buffalo and Spikeball?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify one thing. So, Irwin does not run Buffalo. He doesn't even work for Buffalo. Buffalo is a 100-year-old family-owned business that has been around forever, and they are their own business. Irwin is an independent contractor, I believe. So, he is working on his own. So, I want to clarify that. Irwin did introduce us to Buffalo. Now, I do not believe Irwin did anything wrong, but he is not my employee. I have not asked him to communicate with anybody or do anything. So while I trust him, and my team who knows him better than I do, they all have fantastic things to say about him. I know that we have not said, oh, hey, Irwin, can you actually do some shady stuff and try and communicate with these guys and do this? Like, no. From what little I know, he was fired by Brookline at some point in 2023. I don't know why, and that's not really my business to know. But we had been working with him when he was at Brookline. And after he left, communications continued. But there was no like, hey, try and get the customer list and copy and paste it, and then we'll give it over to these guys. And do, like, no, absolutely not. There are, I
But
forget the exact law.
you can of course see how that looks from an outsider perspective. Staying in contact with an employee, with your distributor that you're canceling your agreement with, and then continuing to still work with an employee that got fired from that distributor and is potentially using their
Relationships
information.
were strained with Brookline at the time, but a decision to leave had not been made. So it wasn't like, the day, and I don't even know when Irwin was fired. I just know it was, I think, sometime in the second half of last year. It wasn't like he got fired on a Monday and Tuesday we said, hey, we're getting ready to fire Brookline at like, absolutely not. I'm guessing he probably saw the writing on the wall and he had kind of known that, relationships were getting strained. And I forget exactly when we had our first conversation with the new distributor and started doing that. But, it's common practice. If we thought there's a chance that the relationship with Brookline may end, we need to have a plan B in place. If we had fired Brookline on a Monday and had nothing in place for a Tuesday, that's not very good. That's poor decision planning or poor business planning. Just like if we're going to, get a new warehouse in the United States, we got to get a new one before we're ready to get rid of the old one. So it was risk mitigation, if you will. So we didn't know that things were going to end when we even when we started talking with Brookline or with Buffalo, we thought they might, but we were still trying to make things work, and we weren't able to make them work. I do understand why people could think that, we did something, if you know nothing else and you just look at, okay, employee from this company, gets fired and starts working with the new one and, oh, there's gotta be something bad going on there. Okay, make the assumption, but before you run with it, email me and ask me a question. And I'm more than happy to explain. And, I'm confident in knowing that we did nothing wrong. I don't think Irwin did anything wrong. My team says he's a great guy, and I trust them. And, but, as I was saying earlier, there is, I forget the exact law or something like that. But when we first started working, actually, even before we started working with Brookline, we spoke with a few distributors in Europe in 2020. And we had learned that the supplier should essentially do what they can to not know who the end retail customers are. That is private information for between the distributor and the end retailers, and suppliers should not get involved in that. That was advice we got, and it's advice we heeded, and we made sure that, we never got that information from Brookline. And knowing that that would potentially put us at risk if we were to get involved with that, that's why we never, that's why I would never ask Irwin, like, hey, can you get that list and give it to us? Now, we did ask Brookline for it as part of our negotiation settlement as the breakup. They said no, and we said okay, and then we offered a new settlement agreement. But yeah, I knew there would be risks if we were to ask Irwin, and that's why it never even crossed my mind to ask him to do that.
Nope. I appreciate the response. I think we're sort of ready and we can move on from this. I'll just say that I think the crux or the crutch to all of this is the contract between Brookline and Spiteball, highlighting whether or not it was Spiteball's responsibility to take back the excess stock, or if it was Brookline's to only give it back if a contract was terminated. I think that's the key to this, because that's what was the domino effect, which led to then the money being put on Brookline to then pay back Spiteball, which then resulted in you guys looking for other distributors to have a more reliable supplier. So I think yeah, that's enough about that stuff. And I also, not to put you on the hot seat, right? It's not stuff that you want to discuss. Nice and having an episode or having a podcast. But on the other hand, I think it's quite important that the community understand a little bit more of the situation, just in an open conversation where it doesn't have to be through, PDFs or emails. It's sort of more of a live response to questions, so people can get a human feeling behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you. All the questions you're asking are fair, and I get that. And I appreciate you asking questions, right? And not making accusations and all that. And this back and forth, I didn't want to have to send the email that I did to all of the European leaders, but I felt it necessary to, explain our side. And anytime somebody speaks ill of you or your business, you don't want to just sit there. But I also don't want to continue this back and forth forever. Like, nobody's going to win. Everybody's going to reply with a yeah, but, well, no, you said this, but you said this. And, I want to get back to helping to build the sport, build the community. And, as I mentioned earlier, the lawyers have it now, and I would love to let them continue to have it. And, I'm again hoping we can repair and get back to building relationships in Europe. And you mentioned earlier how a lot of the or some people in the community may feel that Spikeball hasn't done enough. I agree with that, and I'm the first to admit when I haven't done a good enough job, or if we could have done better. And we could have, and we will. And there are some reasons why we haven't in the past, but there's also some that, I should have, and I didn't, and I'm going to work on that. And there's already some things in play that I'm hoping will get us there. But anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this.
Yeah, and I think a lot, yeah, again, a lot of people appreciate your response. To move a little bit and talk more about Spiteball and the company, because I think that's a lot of people would like more understanding on how are Spiteball doing right now, how have they been doing, and what is the future of Spiteball currently looking at? Because if I just talk about some factors in regards to a lot of people in the community know that many employees and many people have been laid off over the past 12 to 18 months. Many of those being very involved in the competitive side of the sport, which has been a worry for a lot of people about the development of the sport. And we've also, we already touched on in 2022 that, lawn games, backyard games were down a ton due to everything, COVID ending and things opening up and there being less demand. And then in the future, people are also thinking, okay, well, where's Spikeball going in the future? Are their ambitions still to be the next great global sport and not pave the way for the Olympics? Or is it to transition more towards Wango or more towards just being a manufacturer for the sport around that and just being taking a backseat and letting it grow? What to sort of set one at a time, what is the current situation of Spikeball from sort of a financial point of view and a business point of view?
Yeah, so we are in a hell of a lot better shape today than we were even just a few months ago. 2023, to call it challenging, is probably one of the biggest understatements I could give. The layoffs obviously were most painful for those that were let go. But Spikeball isn't what I'd consider a normal company, and we never have been. The relationships have always been very tight. We've had, especially a lot of the early employees, very tight friendships and, going to weddings and all sorts of non-business stuff. So when the layoffs had to happen, it wasn't something I took lightly, and it was really, really difficult. The company didn't have the money to keep everybody on. So it wasn't like we had the money and we're like, oh, you know what? If we cut these people, we could actually make a lot more money if we got rid of them. Like, no, the sales were declining, numbers were not looking good. And, just like if you look at your own checking account, if you're running low on money yourself, maybe you don't go out to dinner as often or, whatever the comparison is. But we were in a really difficult position, and I wish I didn't have to do it. I know, we were, friends with the people we had to let go, but I also know the community was as well. And I hope the community didn't see that as, okay, Spikeball is no longer going to be investing in the sport, because that's not the case at all. People were let go from nearly every department of the company. So it's not like it was only this division that got affected. It was all of them, actually. But our wanting to grow the next great global sport and wanting to invest and all of that hasn't changed one bit. Our desire is still there. Now, the resources we have are smaller today than we did back in 2020, 2021, but I'm confident we'll get back to it. And even with resources being more limited, we're still investing a lot. Like, there's a tournament in Chattanooga in the US in Tennessee this weekend. Had a nice conversation with Andrew Gassaway, who's driving the spike van on his way there. And it's going to be a great weekend. There's ETS events going on, and there's, tournaments happening all over the world, some that we're involved in, some we're not. But we continue to invest. And there's a big difference between sort of the way the sport has grown and the role that we've had in the US and how things have gone in Europe. So in the US, I think, as a lot of people may know, we've hosted historically most of the large events. They have been spike ball events, and we've been sort of the leader in that. That has not been how Europe has been. Europe is very grassroots. There's a lot of clubs, way more formal clubs, and they're all run by the clubs or by individuals. And we play much more of a supporting role. And I love that. I like both approaches. But if you look at how we have been engaging with the community, especially in the US, we're hosting fewer events ourselves, and we're partnering with tournament directors to where they can host. And use their expertise. And if you look at most of our marketing and kind of everything we do as a brand, it's not all that often that we want to be the ones that are on stage or that we're the ones that are in the spotlight. We want the community there. We want us off to the stage supporting. So how can we help with that? How can we make your event even better? Is that with equipment? Is that with flags or promoting it or money or whatever? And that's something that we did not and have not done, I think, as well as we could have especially with the European community. That is an approach that we're slowly transitioning to in the US. And if I could go back a couple of years ago, I would have, whether it be myself or anybody else at Spikeball, I should have been more involved in helping come up with a formal plan on how we can engage, on how anybody on the planet can reach out to us and say, "Hey, Spikeball, I'm not sure how to run this tournament. Should I do single elimination, double elimination, or what's the point system?" I want people to know that we're here to support them, while also realizing that we have 23 employees. We are a tiny company, and while our finances are getting in better shape, we still have some challenges and we need to figure some things out. So while we'd love to sponsor every event or sponsor teams, and that's the other thing, like we're friends with so many of these players, teams, and directors, and they, "Hey, will you $500 for this or $5,000 for this?" And we'd love to say yes to all of them, but we can't. So it's a long answer to your question, but we have not, we are absolutely still committed to the sport. And still want to see at the Olympics someday. I love that the IRF, their tagline, paving the way to the Olympics. I love that, it's an independent board and, we've got great relationships with them and USA Roundnet. I had a great call with obviously the EURA the other day, and I want us to be a supporter. And our definition of supporter and other people's definition of supporter may be different, but we all want the same thing. I think that's a good thing that we've got here, and we all want the sport to grow. And yeah, I want to get back to that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely from an outsider perspective, it's very clear to see that Spikeball have been going through a transitional phase over these last couple of years through everything being run by Spikeball, Spikeball Tour Series, Spikeball creating rules, and then it's slowly transitioning onto, again, the governing bodies taking place, board members becoming more active, USAR now starting their own tour series and starting to become more legitimate. And Spikeball then, you're in a position of do you continue to try to host everything and manage everything, or do you then start to give certain responsibility away to other people and other organizations, which is again great for the sport. I do want to question you about your thoughts on Premier Spike, because when you was interviewed in 2023 on the podcast that I referred to earlier of how I built this, a great point brought up by a guy was that Spikeball, the equipment, it's not patented. So any company could make a very similar product, whether it be Bamble, Zero Bounds, Rash, but we've seen plenty of them over these past few years. And so the only real main difference between Spikeball and other Roundnet manufacturers, without talking about Premier Spike yet, is, well, slightly the ball for competitive players, but non-competitive players, not really any difference. But the second thing is the brand, which again is why it's so important that Spikeball's branding and reputation is good. Because if it's not, then there's less of a reason for the less casual players to choose Spikeball. Why would I? Then it just comes down to exposure. And of course, where does most exposure come from? Well, it comes from the competitive scene. That's where all everything's filmed. That's where everything's coming from. That's where the little kids watch the video and go, "Damn, I want to get a Buddy Hammond touch," or, "I want to get a Gabe Finocchi reverse," whatever it may be, right? And so I think for me it's a surprise that Spikeball have not done more to highlight and show the very top end of the competitive scene. Now, I'm not saying pumping money to the competitive players so they can go this on a full-term basis, because I think we're still a way away from that. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done by the players themselves, and they're just expecting suddenly prize money to fix all their problems. It's not the case. If the gameplay is good, almost everything else fixes itself, and that's another sort of thing to talk about. But I just want to address the point of, do you think you could have done more to really highlight the competitive scene, knowing that again, 90-95% of your revenue and sales is through the standard set and is through the casuals, but it's usually because they've seen and been exposed to the competitive scene or a highlight or a TikTok from these competitive players that managed to make that sale. And so if you focus on the very top and the gameplay at the top, then everything else sort of falls into place.
It almost feels like you've been sneaking in on some of our internal meetings and this debate we have had, and it's a good one. It's a great question, and it's something that I don't have a clear answer to, but I on the one end, yes, we absolutely could and probably should highlight more of the competitive play. And even though that community is maybe 1% of everything, to your point, tons of people, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, watch those video views. Now, on the other hand, I can't tell you how many people, if I'm standing in line at a coffee shop and I've got a Spikeball t-shirt on, a stranger behind me might say, "Oh, I love that game," and I'll talk to him for a few minutes and I'll ask them if they follow us or any other Spikeball related stuff on social media. And they say no. So there is a massive audience out there that has never seen some of this stuff. So, while it's great that in the US we've had a handful of tournaments on ESPN, most people that, in order to get ESPN2, you need to have cable in the US. And most people that have cable are like older people like me, not competitive 22-year-olds who are coming to tournaments. So I struggle with, I love all of the social media stuff that I see. I love what we post. I love what you post and everybody else in the community. But I also realize that it's a tiny slice of what the general world sees. A lot of what the world sees is, like Roundnet Germany, they put up a post last week, which I loved. I think they counted like 43 different sets being used in a park, not at a tournament, but just a casual Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And thousands of people witnessed that. And that is their exposure to the game. Casual, fun. And so on one side, you could argue we need more competitive because that's what, and there's no question about that, does perform really well on social media. Fun Backyard Games also performs well on social media. There was a guy a couple of years ago, I forget who he was, but he was practicing his serve in his backyard. And his little like 5-year-old son was standing way in the background and it kept hitting the kid in the face. And it was hilarious. And that got millions of views. And that wasn't really competitive stuff. So I don't have the data that can prove either way that competitive is the way to go or casual. So we're doing a little bit of both. I don't know what the answer is. Another point is, at least we know that there's a lot of moms. They're the ones that actually purchase the set for their son or daughter. So if they're the ones actually making the decision and buying, should we actually be marketing to moms and speaking to them on why this is a smart purchase for them or why we think their kids would love it? And the way we would speak to her, or it's the dad that buy, but our data shows it is primarily the mom.
Customer profile, yep.
Yeah, that's the way we would speak to her is wildly different than the way we would speak to a Scott Beeks who's in college and, who's a wildly different age and different life stage. So I don't have a crystal clear answer. I think it's a little bit of everything, but should one get 70%, the other get 20, and the other get 10, or that's something we constantly struggle with.
I can agree to that and see obviously your points, and obviously there's different customer profiles that you do need to attract, and how you go about doing that is obviously your decision, right? As your business and your company. I think for a lot of maybe the community's perspective, a lot of the community's maybe frustration or perspective is that if we continue only promoting or primarily promoting the backyard, the fun, the game, then this stigma is never going to evolve from this backyard game. It's forever going to stay a backyard game. And we're getting to a point where people are starting NGBs and clubs, and there's boards and there's tournaments everywhere. And people are using this as their sport. Like, this is their sport. This is their identity, whether you're a football player or you're a pickleball player or you're a roundnet player. And when it's pushed to the casual so much, and so much casual video and footage and content is used, it sort of delegitimizes people's effort, whether that be from an organization standpoint and trying to make it a sport and trying to make it to the Olympics, or just as a player perspective, putting in so many hours to try to become better at the sport. It sort of it hurt. It takes a little bit of a blow to the heart because if Spikeball do have the biggest impact right now in the sport, and maybe still with the next few couple of years, 2 years, whatever, we don't know what the future foresees, but with such a great impact in the sport, continuing to play the narrative of it is a casual game, play on the beach, blah, 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 to attract those mums, those dads, it maybe stems a little bit of frustration towards the competitive scene that believe that it really should be shown more at the 1-2%, because that will filter down and everyone will want to be a Buddy Hammond. The same way when I watch football, you know, I want to do that what Messi did in a reel. I don't want to see some dad playing football who can't play. It might be a little bit funny, but you know, if it's good, if we're saying we want to be a global sport, which Spikeball is still ambitious to being, you know, and contributing to the sport around that, then it's just surprising that not more of that is shown through your social media.
Yeah, no, that it's a fair point. This debate is one reason why we created the STS Instagram account. And you know, that is that while it's much, much smaller, and it's, you know, not all that old. I forget when we started it, maybe a year or two ago. That is geared towards the competitive player, and we have noticed that, you know, if we post, let's say, podium pictures from a tournament on our main Spikeball accounts, they don't perform well. Like, people do not care as much about that. Or if we say, oh, here's the latest top 10 ranking of teams, the 500,000 people that follow us on Instagram, that's not why they followed us. They want to see the amazing plays. They, of course, love amazing plays in tournaments, but they do also love the amazing plays of the 5-year-old or the cute little, you know, kid or whatever. So the argument in favor of more of the casual stuff is the more casual people we can, that's where everybody starts. Right. It's some people start with a pro set, or some people start with a college club or university club or with a tournament. That's pretty rare. Most people start with the casual fun. And in my mind, there's this many people, you know, that's the base of the pyramid. Top of the pyramid is the competitive players. And the base is the rookies or the
The
weekender
casuals.
customers, casuals. Thank you. In my mind, that base is still way too small. If we all want to achieve something, we need that base to be 100 times bigger.
100%.
And while, again, I don't have data to this, I don't know what the ratio should be between the base and the top of the pyramid. We do know, at least online, and what happens online is wildly different than what happens in person. At least online, with the audience that follows us, whether it's our emails, Instagram, et cetera, the casual stuff and the amazing rallies, that is what plays. Like, and we've had a lot of debates over the years where one side is saying more competitive and the other side saying more casual, and it's a healthy debate. I think we'll still be having it 5, 10 years from now. But I do think we need to get more resources to help grow STS, grow that channel. And we also need to work better with clubs to say, hey, what can we do to help you build your own following? You know, whether it's a club in Egypt, in Spain, in Germany, or wherever, like, how can we help you build your own audience? And, you know, let's get everybody's clubs growing.
And I think that moves or transitions nicely into Premier Spike, which obviously came onto the scene in 2023, and have now, you know, from a equipment standpoint, has made some improvements to the pro sets. A little bit sturdier, clickable legs, right? It doesn't move, so a little bit more consistent gameplay. The ball has a preference of players whether they prefer a Premier Spike ball or a Spike ball. But in regards, it did make small improvements to the gameplay of the sport. Now, a lot of also competitive players will say, well, they're not huge improvements, but they are improvements. And they've really been trying to help benefit the community, creators, and really focus on people who are helping develop that base. Of course, Spikeball have been doing this in the background for years and are still doing it in the background alongside while Premier Spike have been doing it. However, a lot of people will look at this and say, hey, it's great what Premier Spike are trying to do and they're trying to innovate. And if, again, the reason why competitive players use Spikeball is because, well, is it down to the equipment or is it down to the branding? Because that's what they've been using. Well, the equipment, if it's equipment wise, probably people may prefer to use Premier Spike. And we're seeing some communities make that shift. And then if it's down to branding, well, then it's even more important that your reputation and your branding is strong, because if not, then it's very easy for another player to come into the market and effect not effectively take over, because again, it's years away from anything of that potentially happening. However, it's obviously a possibility with, again, if suddenly every competitor with this 1% of the triangle is playing on Premier Spike, that now controls a huge percentage of what is shown online, which therefore affects sales globally in the sport around that. So what was your initial opinion when you saw Premier Spike come to the market? And what is your response in regards to the future of where Spike will be heading in regards to equipment? Yes, for the future of Spike Ball.
Yeah, I think competition is a healthy thing for the sport. When I launched the company back in 2008, when we were literally the only one out there, I always wanted us to be seen as a premium product. I wanted us to be seen as the leader, and I didn't want to, make sort of a cheap piece of plastic. So with whether it's Premier Spike or any of the others, while part of me is like, man, it'd be nice to not have a single competitor out there. It is a nice sort of like, okay, we need to keep innovating. We can't get lazy. We got to keep moving forward. And that's I the Pro Set, while I love it and I do still think it is the best product out there, could it use some improvements? Absolutely. Have we been talking about those for quite some time? Absolutely. That takes a long time to actually implement. Had we had tighter relationships, especially with some of the European communities, maybe we would have heard some changes they would like to the product a while ago, and we could have acted sooner. So that's on me. Had we had tighter relationships with some of the players in the US, maybe we would have heard more. So again, that's on me. But we are always innovating. Obviously, the Mammoth set is radically different than anything that's out there. And while we've hit the pause button on it right now, I am confident we'll be bringing it back to market not too long from now. I don't have a time frame right now, but it will be coming back. And I don't want to rely on like small incremental improvements, right? Mammoth is not an incremental improvement over the Pro Set. It is radically different. And when we released it, some people took personal offense to it. They hated it. They went to social media and they shared that. While that was frustrating, I also need to sort of remind myself that, anytime a customer gets worked up about something and expresses that, that's actually a compliment because that means they care about it. If you release something and people just don't respond at all, then okay, that's really tough to work with. But I do think the Mammoth is the future of the sport. I don't think the Pro Set is. Now, that
So,
is not for me to decide. That is for the community to decide. I want to be crystal clear in that. So if 10 years from now, an improved Pro Set or something is, or the existing Pro Set, if that's what people prefer, then that's what we'll continue. But I believe as the leader, the leading brand and company in the round net industry, I take it as a personal responsibility to always be innovating. And, we didn't introduce some minor improvements with this. I mean, God, my God, the Mammoth couldn't be any different. We got some things right on it. We got some wrong, but I do believe, pun intended, the ball has definitely been moved forward and it has sparked a ton of debate and a lot of people love it and some are still kind of not so sure and that's okay. I think that's a healthy thing.
yeah, I think that again, that's a nice move into talking about the Mammoth Set and a little bit of that about the development of the sport and Spikeball. So Skylar Bowles was the main person behind helping innovate the Mammoth Set, if that's correct, yes. And so
Heavily involved, yep.
it was brought to market last year, with an initial order of, was it 1,000 initial made? Or was it?
A little more than that. I forget the exact numbers, but it was a limited run,
Okay.
yeah.
But a limited run, and of course, again, maybe this from one perspective, the community was great. Innovation, new talking points, new discussion, new types of gameplay, different things to evaluate. Great. Other people evaluated this as it's definitely not better than what we currently have. What was the situation? How was this gone about being made and tested? Because many people of those who have tested it are not too favorable towards it. And there's always going to be a bounce back no matter what you make. You know, there was a bounce back when the no-hit zone was included in round net. There was a bounce back when we moved from 6 to 7 feet. And so any change is going to have a bounce back effect. However, it's interesting to know what was the process behind creating this mammoth set, and what is the process moving forward now that Skylar is no longer with you? Who is taking the lead in the sports development slash innovation side from a gameplay perspective? Because we're all aware the gameplay is not where it needs to be right now. This sport needs to gain more numbers and more exposures and more exposure.
Yeah, so there were a lot of people involved in the development of the Mammoth, and both employees and not. So there were all, and I was not on the day-to-day, but I of course got updates from my team on it and all. And the amount of testing that went on with competitive players, all sorts of A/B tests, and you know what problem were we trying to solve?
Was
I
this
forget.
public? Sorry, just to clarify, was this public testing or was this private testing with a handful of individuals that you selected?
I think it was. I guess I'm not sure what you mean by public testing. What do you mean?
I mean, it was the testing made and was the data shared publicly, or was it privately done through a selection of people that Spiteball handpicked to do the testing to gather data?
I believe we handpicked, and it was a handful of top players, and it was.
And what time was this? Just because obviously, again, if it's before the 6 foot line or half of the 7 foot line or before the no hit zone, after the no hit zone, obviously dramatically changes the gameplay because you know we evolve as athletes and we develop, and
Yeah,
physics are more understood.
no hit zone was definitely there. I think, I guess 2020, maybe 2021. 2020 sounds too long ago. Probably 2021. And this project, like, it was a couple years long. Like, it started, it slowed down, it sped up, it slowed down, and you know, so it had this long evolution. Yeah, there's a handful of former employees that were heavily involved in it. And, you know, I don't remember the exact players that were involved, but at the time they were near the top of the rung. And, you know, I think part of it was, okay, how can we get longer rallies? How can we make it more competitive? How can we make it more exciting to look on TV, you know, more viewable? What was another one? If we wanted it to be in the Olympics, we need Olympic grade equipment. And we didn't feel that the pro set at the time was that. But we also knew, like, hey, this, you know, the way it eventually evolved, you know, it's much taller, wildly different net, different ball, like the amount of ball iterations we've had, like, holy smoke. So, you know, to your point, who is keeping an eye on gameplay? You know, it is most of our marketing team. So Andrew obviously is very tight with it. Ruth is a competitive player. Joelle is a competitive player. And you know, we're tight with tons of players, and a lot of it is what we, you know, we can, you know, we learn a lot by going to these events. You know, I was just at the, I wouldn't say just, I was at ASL's event in Orlando in January, I believe it was. You and I chatted for a few minutes there, and I wasn't playing, but I was watching people, and I learn a lot by, you know, any product developer, you can learn a lot by, you know, if you interview people, they'll tell you one thing, but when you watch them use the product, you can usually learn a whole lot more. So we do a lot of that, and we've always done that, whether it be with the Weekender, Mammoth Pro, whatever. So we'll keep listening, and I want to make sure that, and this has been kind of what the way we've always done things since day one. We don't make a product because Chris Reuter, the CEO, thinks it's a good idea and it was his idea and we go. The idea needs to almost always come from the community or from the customer or something we've learned from them. We want to be developing in response to what we've learned from them. So, you know, there was the period of serve ball and, you know, there never being any rallies and all of that. And that played a role in eventually Mammoth Set becoming what it was. So, yeah.
So if obviously, if you're saying that you're so heavily reliant and looking to collaborate with the community, then it comes just as a tiny bit of a surprise, maybe not been more collaboration and even public collaboration, especially with projects that are being done. I mean, we talked a little bit about Spikeball and the European Roundnet community haven't been very in sync over the past couple of years. And also, there's been other projects that have come on to try and also enhance the sport around it, such as, Experimental Round now. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they've been trying to test gameplays and get statistical data from the most recent gameplay of RoundNet and then testing different rules within it. I don't know how much you know about them, but obviously if your development team is shrinking, i.e. Skylar and other employees in other departments, so not from the sports development side, but nonetheless, the sports development side has been decreasing, then are you looking to now increase your communication and collaboration with the community who are looking to help take this sport into the next level? Or are you more keeping or trying to focus on your in-house employees who are in that position to help grow and support the sport and its the future? Because it's going to probably look very different in a year or 2 or 3 years, equipment-wise and gameplay-wise.
Yeah, I mean, whether it be Experimental RoundNet or anybody else, I would love to say yes to absolutely every single one of them. I can't. I don't have the resources, the time, the money, et cetera. So really difficult to decide which ones say yes, which ones get yes. Even just like, the amount of email that I get, even just replying, literally clicking the reply button to tell someone, hey, thanks, it's just not going to work. Like, I get inundated with so much. I can't even give a no to everybody. Some people just don't get a reply, and that kills me. But I have to run this business, and I can't, I want to please everybody, and I want everybody to at least get a response. But so with that said, to answer your question, I want to work with my team, and we have been having conversations over the last few weeks. How can we partner better with? So, okay, if we don't have enough people internally to test this A, B, or C thing, can we work with a different group that has the expertise to do it? They have the interest in doing it, and they'd be a good partner. So I would love nothing more than, yeah, to work with different communities on different things. But I also want, everybody listening, I also want to know, like, we just can't say yes to everything. And I know nobody's asking us to say yes to everything, but if somebody says, hey, I've got the, and I'm just making this up, I've got the best way to measure the serves this distance line, and I've got a product that I think is going to be amazing. I don't think that's really a problem that needs solving, right? I haven't really seen people have many issues with that. And while this person may be super excited about it, it probably isn't worth our time to dig into it. And when we tell that person no, they're probably going to be hurt because it's really important to them and they want to do it. And I don't want to hurt any feelings. I want to be able to say yes, but
It's of
and we're
course.
going to, yeah, we're going to get it wrong sometimes. Some things are going to fall through the cracks, but I hope people know it's not intentional. It's just, there's only 24 hours in a day. I've only got 23 employees. Only 4 of them are on the marketing side. And,
I think
yeah.
that's maybe why I think it's great we're having this talk now, and this is going to be public for a lot of people to hear and listen to, because I think a lot of people would say, we'd love to help, let us know how we can help. And if they've never heard that and they've never been told that, and this is the first time they could be hearing something like that, then
Yeah.
it's like, oh, well, we could be doing so. Like, I'm a big fan of the multiplying effect, right? And that's why I'm a massive fan of what Joelle did with Women's RoundNet, because she inspired more people to make those
Yes.
accounts. Boom, boom. And now look at that. Wow, it explodes. And you can never sometimes measure that effect, but it's always multiplying. And the same way that NGBs have now been started and clubs, organization, once you have it rolling, now you just got people. It's everything is just a snowball, and as long as the snowball's going downhill, you're fine. You don't need to worry about it. And I have the same feeling in regards to, okay, your team has been shrinking, and you're down 23, down to it makes it sound bad, but you have 23 employees now. It's not a huge business. However, you have now more than ever so many passionate, interested people within the RoundNet community that look to hope and want to grow. want to grow it, make it better, make it bigger, and Spikeball could help them. Not it's not even sometimes financially. It's just, hey, communication, what you doing, how you doing it, how can we support it, can we promote it, can we help you find more people for it? And I think that's huge, because
Yeah.
that's just a multiplying effect for you. If you could just invest not even your finances, but just your time into finding those sources, that would be one of the most valuable assets for you. And that's taking no financial commitment. Maybe one or two will, but you say that, you know, you only have so many eggs, right? And you're trying to divide it, and your resources were not what are more now than what they were in 2023. Understandably, you have to make cuts and make hard decisions. But in 2024, we're living in the best time that Round has ever been in regards to the amount of people who are interested in dedicating and growing the sport. So I think a lot of people will be asking you, how can I help? What can I do to help grow the sport of RoundNet? You know, and I think that's quite important, maybe a takeaway for you as well, because there's a lot of people like that, more than there was so in 2018, 19, or 2000, 2011 or 12, when you were sending handwritten emails to people, you know, and saying, hey, can you get some friends come into this pickup?
Yeah, no, that is number one. Thank you. That is a great reminder. Just ask for help and you'll get it. And you're absolutely right. I know in general, I am not good at asking for help. I wish I was. And we are in a very fortunate position at Spikeball in that, you know, we have millions of fans worldwide and they love the brand. You know, if I'll, you know, back to that person I meet at the coffee shop, they think it's like super cool. They just met the CEO or something. And that's great. And that doesn't happen with most companies. And we are in a unique position to where we can engage better with the community. And if we asked for help, I'm assuming 99% of the time the answer is going to be yes. So, yes, I am going to take that suggestion and I appreciate you for bringing it up. So I think it, there's tremendous opportunity there and it's, that could be a 1 + 1 = 3 sort of a thing.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'm happy that that may help. But there's sort of two things I wanted to touch on to sort of end the podcast. The first one being, you also mentioned in the podcast how I built this last year, where that's there's a huge growing market inside pickleball. And Fuengo, who Spikeball you guys acquired, was it 2022 that you acquired it?
Either 21 or 22, I forget
Yeah,
which.
and so you acquired the website of Fuengo, and that's obviously being used to host tournaments, not just within the sport of RoundNet, but now the emergence of pickleball. It's being used very often, other sports too, but primarily pickleball right now in regards to quantity of growth. And it's understandable that you're going to focus a lot on that, because as being a part of Spikeball now, the growth for that is huge, because we're seeing pickleball grow so massively. And then a lot of people will make the correlation of, aha, okay, Fuengo, good asset to have. It's growing rapidly. Now, how can we also dive into that market? Spike Paddles is a product that's recently been developed and released to the market. First of all, how has that initial launch been? And two, how much are you planning to really focus on the Fuengo side of Spikeball over the coming years? As well as potentially also trying to dive more into pickleball market that's growing in the US. How do you see that relationship growing and adapting?
Absolutely. And just to be clear, I've got probably about 5 minutes left and I got to roll.
Okay.
But yes, so how I built this, I think I recorded that maybe last June or so. So May or June, I forget which. Since then, Alex, who's the creator of Fuengo, has left Spikeball. So, you know, he's still doing some contract work for us and he's helping, but we do not have an internal resource currently, to continue adding features and to make it work, you know, to be what I think it can become. So I need to figure out, okay, how do we address this and allow Fuengo to continue growing and do what it wants? To be clear, we are getting more and more pickleball tournaments, but Fuengo is still, I'd guess, 90% RoundNet tournaments. So it's still by all means RoundNet. So, to your earlier point of me asking for help, I am currently looking for a programmer or developer, someone that can help fix bugs and make sure that Fuengo will keep operating as we need it to. This person needs to have experience, so it can't be like, probably not like a college student or somebody that hasn't, been doing this for, I don't know, 5, 7, 10 years. And somebody that wants to make some money on the side, but also ideally this person also knows Fuengo. They've used it as a player, they've used it as a tournament director, and they're maybe a mid to senior level tech exec that knows how to do this sort of work. So that's what I'm looking for right now. So if anybody knows anybody, please let me know. But until I know that, we are not, investing a ton to try and go after pickleball. Spike paddles, while if you look at it, it does have, obviously the paddle's a similar shape to pickleball and all that, and I think there will be some overlap. The inspiration of that was from an employee retreat we did a couple of years ago where we were playing with some random paddles. I think I remember Sean or Skylar, one of them literally put a sandal on their hand and that was what they were hitting with. And we were just having fun at a retreat, and we're like, man, this is kind of fun with paddles, or kind of playing with something else on your hand. So as kind of our product development process works, we just talk about it over months or sometimes years and see what evolves to. And last year or 2 years ago, I forget how long ago it was, I forget if it was the Dink or some other big pickleball Instagram account put up a video of them. They were playing with pickleball paddles, but with a pro net, and that got millions of views. It was way more video than way more views and likes than they had ever had. And I was like, huh, this is the world telling us that they're actually pretty into playing round net with paddles. So maybe this would attract more people to our sport. So what it is not is us trying to start to make pickleball paddles and go after that community. It's now like pickleball is exploding right now, and racket sports as a whole are doing well. And we're like, okay, could this attract way more people to the base of our triangle that we've been talking about? And if that works, maybe some of those paddle players will eventually put the paddle down and they'll start playing barehanded. Or who knows, maybe 5 years from now, tournaments have paddles and competitive players are like, I don't know, but we just thought, like, we think there's something here. We think people will like it. So let's give it a shot.
I think I can understand that. I think a lot of people, again, from a community standpoint and competitive standpoint, are sometimes disappointed because it doesn't directly impact or involve the 1%. Some people will maybe argue and say, we've had the same pro net since 2015. We'd maybe like some improvements on that, especially with the ongoing problems with balls that we maybe don't have time to talk about, but we know are an issue. But I do understand from a business perspective in trying to grow that base, right? Everyone needs to remember. Yeah, and I know you know more than anyone, of course, but we need to remember that 500,000 followers is a drop in the bucket compared to what this sport could be one day. And the amount of people that play competitively is a drop of a drop in a bucket. It's how can we attract more people to the base? Because once you have a base, everything else just filters up. And if you have a great top of the diamond, or top of the triangle, then everything filters down because people are seeing that and they want to then be a base and then move it up that stages the same way. Again, other sports have the top players at the top, and you watch their reel or you watch their video and you go, oh, I want to do that.
Absolutely. And I think it'll attract, right now, Spikeball is the biggest sponsor or the biggest company in the round net world, right? How can we get the community big enough to where Coca-Cola is sponsoring events, to where Adidas is wanting to get involved? And, we're happy to be sort of the biggest sponsor right now, but in order for the sport to really get to where it is, think of any, you're a soccer slash football player, correct? Think of whoever the main sponsors for that are. And that's wildly different than who's sponsoring in Florida and who's sponsoring in Berlin, but there's an insane amount of money. Think about who's sponsoring the NBA or any of these. State Farm in the US, it's an insurance company. They sponsor tons of football and basketball. And like their product has nothing to do with the sport.
Indeed, but it's such a huge audience that they know.
So as long as the sport continues to rely on Spikeball to be the biggest, we're not going to really get as big as we all want to be. So we all need to work together on growing that community, growing, 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 so we can attract the massive companies that can, And we've had some sponsorships and it's gone, well, I'd say not great, but it's kind of up and down. But I would love one day for a company to show up and they're 100 times the size of us. And I don't know, is it Gatorade? Is it Gymshark or whomever it is? But that I think will be what allows, somebody that can pour the saying that I love is pouring gas on the fire to really make it bigger. That is something I look forward to.
You said 5 minutes, so I'm gonna allow you to go, so that you don't run over or go miss your next meeting. I'm sure there's 1,001 things we could discuss more, but I really do appreciate you coming on, giving your time to share some of your thoughts and your feedback, and comments on some of the topics recently. So I really appreciate you coming on, Chris.
I appreciate your time, everybody that's listening. I appreciate you giving the time to this. And we are here. We're not going anywhere. We're going to continue to invest. We want this sport to grow. And I'm looking forward to we'll get beyond our current issues and we'll hopefully continue all growing together. So, Scott, really appreciate this.
Ready. Thank you everyone for listening. This has been episode one of That Round It podcast. Hope you all have a lovely day. Alrighty, thank you very much for listening to episode one of season three here on That Round It podcast. I thought I'd just add some side notes to the end of this podcast. I haven't done this before, but I think it's maybe a nice way to end some podcasts, just to give you maybe a personal perspective from my view on the pod. I just want to add that it was very stressful, this episode, just because it felt like I'm now diving into the world of politics, and not what I wanted to do. I want the community to stay informed and be aware of these situations occurring, but I don't want to be the middleman who's having to receive all the information. I want to receive the information to be informed, to give the best then information to the community, but I don't want to spend all my time having to play the role of a lawyer. And that's sort of, again, the role I tried to take during this episode. Just sort of saying both sides to inform the community, but it's never going to be solved until the contracts are out in front of the court, and then what happens there tells the truth or tells more of the story. I don't want to be in the middle of this, but I do hope that this episode did give you more context regarding the situation. I'm looking forward to more episodes in focusing more on ideas, thoughts, discussion with other people in the Round It community. And if I'm honest, I so wish that we had more time to discuss more things. I felt like there were so many lead-up questions I have for Chris, and maybe this podcast just gave me more questions than answers for him personally, from my perspective. It was tough sometimes to get into the real detail of some things because there was just so much to talk about. And when not all the time in the world, it's then tough to narrow it down to the most important things. But I do wish there was a lot more information or a lot more time to talk about more questions I had for him. But either way, I hope you guys did enjoy this episode. Looking forward to episode two. And I hope you guys have a great day, evening, weekend, wherever you're at, whatever time it is for you. Thank you again for listening.